This message was recorded July 26, 2020. The speaker is David Simpson.
Now, if you would take your Bibles and find your place in Luke chapter 16. Now, we've been talking about heaven, and we are now to our 14th message on heaven. And I'm going to tell you where we're going to go from here. I have, depending on how far I get today, I don't think I'll get as far as I wanted to, but I want to talk with you about what it means about treasure in heaven. I'll probably have to do that next week. And then we're going to go to Revelation 21, and I'm not sure how long it'll take us there, but I'm going to finish up our study of heaven by going to Revelation 21, and I've never done that before. It'll be my first time to talk about those verses, though I've looked at a little bit of that. So we'll be doing that in the next few weeks, the Lord willing. But today, I want to talk with you about the place. Heaven is a place for God's deceased elect. Last week, I talked about it's a place for God's elect, His justified elect, and His forgiven elect, those three things. Today, it's a place for God's deceased elect. So as much as we don't like to think about it, we are living in a dying body. Your body is dying all the time. The cells are constantly being replaced. And one of these days, they will reach a place when they're not replacing them fast enough and able enough, and you'll not be in this world any longer. Death is coming for all of us one way or another. What happens to us when we die? What happens to us when we die? And I'm not trying to answer all the questions concerning that. Maybe I should. But I want to talk with you about heaven is the place for God's elect who decease or expire from this life. So I chose this passage because it sets this clearly before us. And I'm going to talk about verse 19, 20, 21, and 22, not the rest of this parable, to set this before us. But I want you to look in verse number 1 of chapter 16. Jesus began to give a parable of the unjust steward. And verse number 1 says, "And there was a certain rich man." Then if you look over into verse 19, "And there was a certain rich man." So it's a parable, two sides of the same parable, if you please. And by the word certain, he means one of renown, one of renown. So like the Pharisees and the Sadducees of that day, a certain one. But notice that they are unnamed, so he doesn't give a name. So that certain rich man represents all the whole of Judaism. He's not honored with a name like Lazarus, which I'll talk about in a moment. So you notice that conflict right there. So you have the rich man who is a certain rich man, and he's not named. He represents all. And then there is Lazarus. He is rich, and there's nothing wrong with being rich, but he was also self-reliant and self-absorbed. He was full of himself and full of what he had. You'll notice that he lavished himself with clothing. He's clothed in purple and fine linen. Now, this fine linen would have come from another part of the world, and this purple, they didn't have anything like that in that part of the world. It came from a fish, from a dye out of the Mediterranean Sea. It would have been a mussel fish. I guess it's a fish, but a mussel. And it came out of that mussel from the Mediterranean Sea, and that's where that purple came from. If you remember that Lydia was a seller of purple. Well, here he is dressed up in this purple. So he is lavishing himself with his clothes. And he had a different change of clothes for every day if he wanted. Clothes and the fine linen. But he also lavished himself with food. He fared sumptuously every day. Had expensive food every day. Breakfast, afternoon, evening. When he wanted something, he called a servant. And he got it. He had all the clothes and all the food, the very two basic things of life, right? Food and clothes. It's the two things of life that you really need. You need some food and you do need clothes. So he had all that he could have of that and an abundance of it, more than he could possibly want in this life. He had everything that he wanted in this life. But then when you come to verse number 20, it says, and there was a certain beggar. So he used that same idea of a certain, and he said a beggar, which means he didn't have anything. He didn't have rich clothes, barely was covered on his body. Old clothes, dirty clothes, stinky clothes. If you're around Lazarus, he would have stunk. You wouldn't want to be by him. You wouldn't want to be with him. He also was hungry. He was just hoping to get a few crumbs that might fall from the table of the rich man. So he doesn't have clothes. He doesn't have food. And then notice the third thing about him. He's laying at the gate, which means he's outside the gate, never inside the gate. And that is a picture of Christ who is outside the gate, not in the central of the heart of Judaism. Now, the name Lazarus means God has helped. God has helped. So Lazarus is outside the gate. Christ is outside the gate. Lazarus is suffering from not having clothes and not having food. He's in privation. He also has sores that are covering his body. And so that is a picture of his suffering from head to foot. And you remember back in Isaiah where it says that God revealed that they were covered with sores from top of their head to the bottom of their feet, and they were full of sores and putrefying sores. Well, what Christ took upon himself was our sores. What he took upon himself was our suffering. What he took upon himself was our lack, this case illustrated by lack of food and lack of clothes, our lack. He took upon himself, and he's on the outside of the gate, for Lazarus is a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ. Yet the name God has helped, it doesn't look like God's helped him. If you looked at Lazarus, you wouldn't think that God has helped Lazarus. If you looked at those two, which one would you think God was on the side of? Wouldn't you say the rich man? If you looked at it, you'd say God's on the side of the rich man. God has helped the rich man. But which one of those two had God helped? Lazarus. And we're going to see that in just a moment. And when you look at the Lord Jesus Christ, if he is a picture of Lazarus, God has helped, how is it that the Father has helped the Son? Well, here's what the Father said about the Son. In Isaiah 42:1, he said, "Behold my servant, whom I uphold." So the Father was on the side of the Son and upheld him. And here's the Son of the Father. He said, "I will put my trust in him," Hebrews 2:13. He's rejected. He's outside the gate. What did John say? He came unto his own. That means his own creation. But his own people received him not. If you look back up at verse 14, if you look back up there a little bit, see the word derided. While Jesus is talking, while he's giving these parables, preaching to them, telling the gospel, were their hearts hardened or softened? Hardened. They derided him. And that word derided is a word that means they mocked him. They sneered at him. They scoffed at him. They ridiculed what he had to say. Full of sores. Typical of sin and corruption. Who his own self bare our sin in his body on the tree. Look at verse 21. And desiring, not a little bit, but hungering and thirsting, desiring was Lazarus to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. This is Christ in his low estate, his humility, lowered himself and became a man. These crumbs perhaps represent the remnants of grace shown to Israel, God's revelation, God's promises, God's covenant. He desired to be fed with the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table. If the rich man represents Judaism, then this is what fell from the table. And then notice, moreover, in verse 21, moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. The only friends that he had were a pack of mongrel dogs. And that day, they just let the dogs run free to Today we spend billions of dollars taking care of our animals. I see people walking in the neighborhood that I live in carrying their little plastic bag, human beings picking up the excretion of the dogs. In that day, no sir. They were just mongrel dogs. They were running free, and the soft tongues of the dog came and licked his sores. And these dogs represent the Gentiles. And they came and they licked his sores. The gospel first came to the Jews, but it was largely rejected. And then it came to the Gentiles. And these dogs, representing the Gentiles, just came and licked the sores of Lazarus. Now we come to the verse I really want to talk about. And it came to pass, the beggar died. The beggar died. And was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. That's probably what you'll say about me when I die. You'll probably say the beggar finally died. And he was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. And the rich man also died, and he was buried. All right, what a verse. When the beggar died, his body was taken with the other poor of that time, and he was just tossed into the valley of Gehenna that burned all the time. And the bodies and the trash and the garbage just burned continuously. That's why hell is called Gehenna, because of the constant burning. So it's a picture. It's not to say that hell isn't a real place, but the picture of it is their burning garbage pit where the poor were thrown. They weren't even buried. They were just thrown out there and they burned continuously. They become nothing but bones. He had no family, no one to take care of him. He was just tossed into the valley of Gehenna. But the rich man also died, and when he died, they had for him a big funeral. And all kinds of other rich people came, and the governor came, and the mayor came, and the city council came, and they all sat around, and the preacher stood up, and he preached the character of this man and preached him to the highest step in heaven. There's only one problem, and that is the preacher was looking the wrong direction, because in the highest step of heaven, he was on the highest step, but it was in hell. And so the preacher did what most preachers do, and they take people and they preach them right into heaven. But not so of this man. You'll notice when the beggar died that his soul was carried into Abraham's bosom by the angels. And it's a way of referring, when he talks to Abraham, talks about Abraham, it's a way of referring to Abraham as God's elect and referring to him as the father of God's elect, because that's what Paul said. He is the father of us all, meaning all of us who are his people, Jews and Gentiles, all of us. He is the father of us all, Abraham's bosom. It's also the place where Jesus, to the thief on the cross, referred to as paradise. It's also referred to by Paul as paradise. And so this bosom of Abraham and the paradise and heaven are all a way of referring to the place where God's elect go when they leave this world. The rich man died, his soul went to the place that's the place of torments. And that torment is going to be a torment forever, because it is a place of conscious awareness, perpetual suffering. There is no redemption there, no hope of redemption in that place. Lazarus has gone to a fixed place in Abraham's bosom, and it is a witness against the presumptuous sinner, which is what this man is, this rich man. Lazarus went to the secure place in Abraham's bosom, which was a witness against the hopeless state of the arrogant sinner, which is what this rich man was. Lazarus went to the Abraham's bosom, the comfortable place, which was a witness against the just state of the unjustified sinner, which is what this rich man was. And in this whole passage, we see the most foolish prayer prayed in all of the Bible. The rich man all of his life had no interest whatsoever in truth. He might not have said, I don't believe it. I would imagine that he went to the temple and gave his temple dues, and he did what he was supposed to do, being a Jewish man. But yet he had shunned truth, and now his prayer is too late, and it is a foolish prayer. He's asking for an exception for himself and for his brothers. Let Lazarus come and put some water on the tip of my tongue. And Abraham said to him, no, there's a gulf fixed between us. That cannot be done. Then let him go and preach the gospel to my brothers so that they won't come here. It's just a matter of them hearing, and they'll make a decision that they don't come here. Oh, is that right? Jesus said, though one rise from the dead, they still won't believe. Who is he talking about? He's talking about himself. So even though I rise from the dead, you still won't believe. Your brothers wouldn't believe, and all of Israel will not believe. They had shunned the truth. They did not know that God is not a respecter of persons. The rich man asked Lazarus to testify to his brothers, but what did Jesus tell them to do? In verse number 29, he told him to go to the Scriptures. You have Moses and the prophets, and that's enough. If you would follow what you had in Moses and the prophets, that would be enough, and it would direct you to me. But that's not going to happen. Lazarus died. Here is my point. Lazarus died, and he went directly, straight, immediately to Abraham's bosom, to paradise, to heaven. He went where God had predestined for him to go. So Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 8, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. When we leave this body, we don't linger around. We don't linger around. We're not thinking about what's going on here. To be absent from this body is to be present with the Lord. So we are right to want to stay here as long as we can. It's right to be happy in this life. It's right to be loving toward our family, be everything that we ought to be. But if you are one of Abraham's sons, one of God's elect people, be absent from this body is to be present with the Lord. I'm going to talk with you about one more thing, and then I'm going to stop. Heaven is the place for God's deceased elect. Heaven is the place for God's resurrected elect. I want you to look back with me, or look over with me, rather, to your right, to the Gospel of John, chapter 5. Chapter 5 and verse number 29. Chapter 5, verse 29. Heaven is the place for God's elect, God's justified elect, God's forgiven elect, God's deceased elect, God's resurrected elect. Verse 29. And shall come forth, talking about out of the graves, and verse 28. They that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. What is it to do good? That's the question. What is it to do good? It's very simple. To do good is to believe on Christ. To do good is to believe on Christ. We are just to say God's elect go to heaven. We are also just to say believers go to heaven. Because if you understand what a believer is, then you can say believers go to heaven. You can say believers believe the gospel. Now, we do have to clarify in our day what it is to believe and what it is we must believe. But likewise, the non-elect, the non-redeemed, the non-believers are resurrected to what at the end of that verse? Damnation. Same place that the rich man went, that one place. Then I want you to look with me to Luke chapter 14, look back to Luke 14, verse 13 and 14. But when thou makest a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind. I stop there. That is typical of we who are God's people. We are poor. In fact, we are totally bankrupt. We have nothing to bring to pay for our salvation. We're maimed. We are lame in our feet and our legs, and our eyes and our heart. We cannot see, we cannot understand. We are maimed and we are lamed and we are blind. If you can see yourself in that way, as the way God sees you, you have nothing to bring, nothing to offer. Thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee For thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just. What is the resurrection of the just? Well, at the end of this age, the end of this age, we die, our body goes in the grave, our spirit goes to heaven. We've seen that. But our body lies in the grave. But what's going to happen at the end of this age is that body is going to be raised up out of the grave. And the spirit and the body are going to be joined together, and it is called the resurrection of the just, meaning the justified ones. And the justified ones and they who do good are the same ones. The ones that God elected, Christ justified at the cross, and the ones, those same ones God called to faith in time, and they do good and believe upon Christ. It's not because you do good, you're just because of what Christ did. But you do good because he calls you in time to believe the gospel. One more place. Look a little to your right to Luke 20. Luke chapter 20. Look at verse 34. I'm not reading and putting these all in context. It would take too much time. Neither, verse 36. Let me read 34 to 36. The children of this world marry and are given in marriage. That's right, and that's good. It's what we ought to do. But they which shall be accounted worthy to obtain that world and the resurrection from the dead, neither marry nor are given in marriage. Neither can they die any more, for they are equal unto the angels and are children of God, being children of the resurrection. What does it mean, equal unto the angels? Well, that word equal is a word that means similar or comparable or like. So here's what he's saying to them. He is saying that angels are not married in the next life. We're not going to marry either. People talk about their families all being in heaven. And I'm not saying we're not going to know each other, because we're not going to know less in heaven than we know up on earth, but our thoughts and our feelings toward one another will be different. There will be no more desire to populate the world. That will have passed. So like the angels, comparable to the angels, like the angels, we will no longer desire to marry. We will no longer have those familial family desires that we have presently. That will be past. Kind of blows our mind to think of it, because my whole life is around my wife and my family and around you. But in that time, it'll be different. The thoughts will be different. Jesus says that it will be a thought that will be like the angels. That's the way we will be. So that will have passed. When we die, our spirit goes to heaven. When the Lord comes back, or at the end of this age, the body will be resurrected. The spirit and the body will be joined together. There will be a glorified body. I'll talk about that a little bit more in the future. There'll be a glorified body that'll be like that of the Lord Jesus Christ. And then we will go to heaven. And then all that's going to take place in that heaven, and there's going to be a new heaven, a new earth. I'm going to talk about that in the coming weeks. But all of that is still to come. It's a wonderful thing. Heaven is a place for God's elect, his justified elect, his forgiven elect, his deceased elect, and his resurrected elect. The Lord willing, a couple of weeks I'll talk with you about what is meant about spiritual treasure. Heaven is a place for spiritual treasure. In eternity, God elected a definite people at the cross. God satisfied God's justice. At the cross, Christ became the substitute of those God chose before the foundation of the world. Upon the cross, the Lord earned a righteousness by his perfect obedience. God accepted it, and God reckoned that righteousness to their account. And that imputation is their salvation. It is their justification. It is their ransom, all at the cross. In time and experience, God calls these same ones to faith, to hear and to know and to believe this one single gospel. Until then, until we are deceased, which we hope is a long time, till we are deceased, until there is the resurrection of the Lord's people, what are we going to do? Well, one of the things we're going to do is we're going to sing. Song we like to sing, He leadeth me, O blessed thought. O words with heavenly comfort fraught. Whate'er I do, where'er I be, still 'tis God's hand that leadeth me.